It's time for the Rink Rats with Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. You have met our new security system.
Yeah, it's like getting into Fort Knox.
What are your thoughts?
It's annoying.
Yeah, but it keeps me safe, so you should be happy about that.
All right, yeah. It's, yeah, for those that don't know, you have to like buzz in, and not to make it worse, this guy and Chris Chapman and Jared and everyone in the building is just kind of standing there laughing at me on the other side of the glass.
Well, because there's instructions on how to get in.
I just held my hands up in confusion.
You were like shrug emoji.
Yes.
You didn't know what was going on. That's all right. It's fine. So I know that we're going to go heavy on the mailbag here in this episode, but I do want to touch on a couple of things. We have not spoken to you all since the Colorado game and the Anaheim game. And I feel like those two games are such a juxtaposition about what this team can be when they play the right way and what they can be when they play the wrong way. Obviously, not the effort that you wanted in the Colorado game. Gerard Gallant, post-game, really lit the team up like he's never done before. Complete no-show, embarrassment. Thankfully, Colorado took their foot off the gas so that they didn't embarrass us. I mean, those were comments. And here's my main piece. Here's my main takeaway. After the game, Max Pacioretty talks about it being a wake-up call, right? The Golden Knights go out, demolish the Anaheim Ducks. An Anaheim team that was on the second end of a back-to-back that just didn't have it. Hampus Lindholm was a late scratch, so missing some key pieces. And Max Pacioretty post-game said something that I thought was very intriguing. When Chris Chapman asked him, is this the type of game that you wanted, that you needed after that Colorado game, Pacioretty said, yeah, I mean, it's nice, but like they were on the second half of a back-to-back. They're a team that we essentially should beat. So this didn't really teach us anything that we can take with us later. The test is not this game. It's next game and the next game and the next game. Whether or not we can be consistent in terms of the effort that we're putting forth for 60 minutes. I thought that was a fantastic point of view from Max Pacioretty in general, because the immediate fan response is, ha, they're back.
Yeah.
Well, there are circumstances that led to that being such a dominant game for the Golden Knights.
He also mentioned, and you don't often hear players talk about puck luck when it's going their way. It's almost always when things don't go their way, you talk about, well, a few bounces here and there could have been different. Pacioretty actually said, all the bounces went our way tonight. So that was nice, but we can't expect that to happen all the time.
And Max Pacioretty in that game had 7 shots on goal. They were great scoring chances too. John Gibson was just that much
phenomenal.
Better.
And like Mark Stone's first goal, that was a massive goal because they were dominating the game and they go down 1-0. And like that's what Pacioretty's talking about with puck luck.
Yeah.
Mark Stone didn't score that goal.
Well, here's the funniest
the Ducks
thing.
Scored it for him.
Did you look at the official score sheet, like the event summary of that game?
No.
Who's the one Golden Knight that did not have a registered shot on goal?
I have no idea.
Mark Stone.
Wow. Because that one hit the crossbar, so
and then,
it wasn't a shot on
goal. And then Cam Fowler put it in his own net.
Shot it directly into his own net.
Of all the skaters, Mark Stone is the only one to not register an actual shot on goal.
Wow.
And he scored.
Yeah. So my takeaway from those two games was, and I kind of wrote the story about it, but we had a game where the Golden Knights looked maybe slower than they've ever looked in franchise history against Colorado. I don't know if I can ever think of a game where they looked slower than they did against Colorado. And after the game, every player on the team, we played too slow. We have to play faster. We have to play faster. Then the next game, they come out, and albeit under good circumstances, they played extremely fast. Highest shot differential in franchise history. They allowed the fewest shots in franchise history. And I kind of used those two games, those two opposites, to really get it out of them. And it was mostly Pacioretty and Stastny, because they will break down hockey.
They'll talk better than
most guys on the team.
Yeah.
And I basically tried to solve the cliche of we play fast, we play our game, we play. And like, what does that mean? Because Gerard Gallant says after every win, well, we play fast tonight. And after every loss, the other team was faster than us. Are they getting slower? Obviously not. Obviously not. The players who are slow are always slow. The players who are fast are always fast. So that's not. So like, I was really trying to figure out what the hell are they talking about? Obviously transition, but how? What leads to that? And Patch Reddy gave me the greatest quote of all time, saying, "It's not just forcing turnovers on defense. When the other team has the puck, it's not just about getting the turnover." It's about when you get the turnover, because if you let the other team come into your offensive zone and set up, and your forwards who are back checking come back into the defensive zone and stop their feet, momentum is stopped. You're at a standstill. Now, if you force a turnover, you get the puck. Great, but you don't have any speed, and the defensemen are able to easily get back. The forwards are able to back check. It stops all the passing lanes. It doesn't let you get any transition. Whereas when your forwards are skating back towards your own net, if your defensemen can force the turnover then, or your forwards can force the turnover then, it allows those guys to keep that speed, simply flip a Yui, and when you make that turn, you actually gain some speed, and it allows you to attack them with so much more just dangerous opportunities, because the forwards aren't back because they're deep forechecking on the other end. The defensemen are caught on their heels because they're not expecting you to have speed. And one of the key things that Stastny said, because Patch Reddy gave me all this great stuff. Then I went over to Stastny and asked him about it. And a key thing that Stastny mentioned was the single player on the team who does that better than anyone else is Nate Schmidt. Forces the turnover and quickly transitions it into offense. And it looks like they're getting Nate Schmidt back tomorrow, which makes them play faster. We all wondered last year, how can one player make that big of a difference? Well, the key to this team playing the way they want to play is this aspect of the game. And Nate Schmidt does it better than anyone.
It's funny because when you get the turnover is very interesting. It's great that Patch already gave you that, because oftentimes we ask questions, we don't get very much, but it makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. If you've got a forward who's coming back into the offensive zone and you get that turnover right as the opposition's crossing your blue line, it's a quick indirect pass off the boards, and all of a sudden you've got all the energy, all
Boom.
The momentum.
Yeah,
and it's back, and that's why puck management at both blue lines is so incredibly crucial.
Yes.
And you hear teams talk about turnovers at the blue lines, turnovers at the blue lines. Like, if you're not taking care of the puck in those areas, it's going to end up in the back of your net, and it works both ways.
Yeah.
And you're right, absolutely, about Nate Schmidt. I mean, this is a player who's really good at using his stick. He doesn't give guys a ton of space as they cross over into the offensive zone. And that's something that I noticed a little bit with Shea Theodore. And it's not that his gaps are bad in terms of getting beat around the corner. It's that he allows play to enter the offensive zone.
He gives them an easy entry.
Because, and this I think is something that we've talked about with Shea in terms of playing above where he should be in the lineup. He doesn't want to get burnt.
Yes.
He doesn't want to get dangled. He doesn't want to get danced around. So what's the easiest way to make sure that doesn't happen?
Play
you
soft.
Back up a little bit. You give up a little bit of time and space. You allow the play to enter the zone, and then you angle them off into the boards so that at least you don't get danced trying to make a play. Nate Schmidt doesn't have any fear when it comes to that, because he's so good. He knows he's going to get it. He's right up there on teams. And that's why when you look at Riley Smith, when you look at William Karlsson, and when you look at why this team is so good down a man on the penalty kill, it's because they don't give you time and space at that in that crucial area of the ice where if you create a turnover, you go back the other way 2-on-1 with speed.
Yeah, and it seems like we're putting a lot of this on the defense, which it is. It's up to the defense to close the gaps to, the way I put it in the story was, they drew their line in the sand. Every defenseman has his line in the sand. You cross this point, I'm attacking the puck.
Yeah.
And against Colorado, that line was about at their face-off dot. Whereas against the Ducks, it's easier to do that because they don't have the same dangerous speed and the same players as Colorado, but they drew that line at the blue line. But it's not all on the defenseman. It's on the forwards, because one, the harder you back check, the more crowded players feel as they're entering the blue line, the more aggressive your defenseman can be. Because if John Merrill's got Nathan MacKinnon coming up on him, and Nathan MacKinnon's all by himself and has speed, he has no choice but to back off.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Or you're going to you're going to look like an idiot. Whereas if Nathan MacKinnon's coming through the neutral zone and he's got William Karlsson on his back, whacking at his stick, trying to do something. Merrill all of a sudden feels much more confident that he's not about to get dangled. I can cut him off at the blue line.
Yeah.
And then not only the back checking, but also the forwards have to read the play. Because the key to keeping that speed and turning it into transitional offense is timing it right where the turnover happens, you turn, and they can feed it to you with speed, and you're off to the races. But if you guess wrong, and you either take too long to turn around, then all of a sudden you lose all the momentum. Or if you think you're getting a turnover and you don't, and you've turned and exited the zone, you always hear leaving the zone early, yeah, leaking out. That's bad. And so it's not just on the defenseman, it's on the forwards. And they always say, we have to work, you back check as a five-man unit, we have to forecheck as a five-man unit. So it's not just the defenseman, and this isn't all on the defenseman without Nate Schmidt in there that aren't doing this, but for me, it's something that I've kind of known, but didn't really get a quote that was that specific about it. And I like going forward, I'm going to watch. When are the turnovers? Can they keep that momentum going? Can they get the forwards the puck with speed?
Yeah, and I think that's something that a lot of people are going to be paying attention to now as well. And can we just pause for a moment on how great Max Pacioretty is when it comes to talking?
Phenomenal.
Like, and that's no disrespect to anybody else in the locker room, but you can tell that he's been a captain for a high-pressure organization because he doesn't back away from throwing opinions out there that need to be said.
Yeah.
And I love that about Max Pacioretty, because you know that if you ask him something, as long as he knows that you've got an angle that makes sense, he's going to give you something.
Yeah.
Like the fact, you know, you guys talk about playing fast, and that's great, but what the hell does that mean? And give me something usable. I have really grown to enjoy hearing Pacioretty talk about wins and losses and just overall hockey in general, because the guy gives you a ton of great information almost every time he steps to the microphone.
Yeah, great. Sorry, I was just...
No, you're fine. You're fine.
I have a story that's being edited right now as we speak, and I'm trying to get it like published.
Whatever. All right, so anything else that you want to touch on over the last week in Golden Knights land before we get into mailbag? And the only reason we're going to do a heavy mailbag episode today is because some of you complained we didn't answer your questions, and we feel bad about that. But I feel like the majority of questions that are asked are typically answered throughout the entire podcast, even if we don't answer you specifically. But we're going to give a little bit extra today and try to answer as many of these as we can get to. But anything else that really stuck out to you? Or that you're looking forward to or looking for in the next week or so of gameplay?
I mean, it's going to be fun to see Schmidt and Tuck back out there. I think Tuck's going to help that third line a lot. I think he's going to help that second power play unit a lot. I think the Nate Schmidt factor, everyone's kind of been talking about it for the last 13 games. When are we going to get him back? How is it going to change things? But nobody, I think Tuck has kind of gone under the radar, and the biggest issue with this team has been the third line can't score a goal.
Nothing.
And if there's anyone that you can inject in the lineup, like Alex Tuck is a dynamic offensive player who can gain zone entry, who can pretty much single-handedly make plays, and now he's got Cody Glass. I'd wish Glass was on the center, not on the wing, but he has a player in Cody Glass who thinks the game offensively, looks for chances, is going to get him the puck in good spots. So I'm excited to see if Glass and Tuck can break the curse of the third line that has existed for basically 2.5 years with this team.
Well, that all depends on, and we did a little bit of an exercise with Ken Bulkey and Simbin.Vegas where you gave what your ideal lineup would be for Thursday. I gave my ideal lineup for Thursday. You and I and Ken really didn't differ that much in terms of what we would do, but all of us had Cody Glass as a third line center.
And did you have Carrier with him?
I had Carrier with him.
We all had Carrier,
and Alex Tuck. Because the speed, the size, their skill. I'm sorry. Like, I know that Will Carrier is looked at as a fourth line winger that has speed and flashes here and there, but when it comes to finishing, he's not there. I don't care. Go to the net. Go to the front of the net. If you're Will Carrier and you get that opportunity, if it ever comes, to play with Glass and Tuck, you're going to score goals just by virtue of the fact that you're going to go to the net, and those two guys are going to be able to get the puck there.
Where I've seen the biggest growth from Carrier this year is his hands behind the net. So he's constantly fighting back behind the net, checking, forechecking. There's just scrums back there. Him and Reeves are both going at it back there. He has, when he gets control of the puck back there, he's not simply rimming it to the blue line for his defenseman. He's making space for himself with his speed, with his change of direction behind the net, and he's finding guys in the center. How many times has he hit Ryan Reeves in the slot this year?
That's what I want to jump on. This guy makes really good, smart hockey plays.
And if that's Tuck instead of Ryan Reeves, because that's where, if you put him on the third line and Tuck is his right wing, all those passes to Reeves are now to Tuck.
Yeah.
How many of those are goals? A lot.
More than two.
Yeah.
More than two. And like, I know we're kind of oversimplifying things here, but if you were going to give that a shot, I think Cody Glass should be your third line center, because let's face it, if he ends up lining up where we expect him to, which will be the left wing on the third line, this is Cody Glass, 14 games into his NHL career, and it's his fourth different position on the team.
Well, yeah, fourth. Yeah,
second line center.
If you count changing lines as different positions, but not only that, but third different hockey position.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
That's unbelievable that he's played both wings and center in 14 games.
When he is the number six overall pick and should be a center.
And is the third best center on this team right now.
I don't think it's particularly close either.
I don't think it is either.
So I understand, and this is kind of what I want to get to. When I put Carrier, Glass, and Tuck together, and you did, and I think Ken did as well, the immediate response I think that a lot of people had is, well, that line's not going to be able to defend well because Cody Glass is a rookie and Will Carrier and Alex Tuck aren't the most defensively responsible players and X, Y, and Z and blah, blah, blah. I don't care.
Carrier and Tuck have also been tried out on the PK, so clearly Gallant.
I think both guys are a bit underrated in terms of how they can play defensively. Are there going to be mistakes? Absolutely. Are all three guys pretty young? Sure. Are they going to have moments where they get hemmed in their own zone? Of course. But I don't care.
Man, that'd be a young line. That would be the youngest line in Golden Knights history.
Yeah, absolutely.
Glass is 20, Tuck's 23, and Carrier's 24?
I think so.
That's a young line.
It's a young line. But here's the thing.
They're fast.
And they're
physical.
Going to play in the offensive zone more often than not. More often than not, even if they don't start there, or even if they lose the puck, they're tenacious enough through the neutral zone and on the back check to get the puck back. You're never going to have an easy offensive zone shift against those three guys. You just aren't.
I feel like Carrier's making so many plays out of those corners. He's winning battles, and so many times when you win those battles, you just slide it up the boards to the defenseman waiting at the blue line. And he's making plays. And I just feel like if those passes are to Tuck and Glass in the center of the ice, they're going to do magic with it. Instead of when it's Nosek or Reeves or plug in, Wah, whoever, fourth liner, they're kind of just throwing it at the net or getting it deep again. I think he just works well because Glass's biggest weakness is board battles. He's not strong enough to dominate on the boards like Tuck and Carrier do. I feel like let those two do that. Let Glass sit back, be the first man back on defense if you lose the board battle. Mm-hmm. And then when they win those battles, get the puck into Glass's hands and let him
create
plays.
Yeah. And that's the big thing. I don't care if they are less defensively minded than Glass, Eakin, and Tuck. You want to know why? I want them to score.
Yeah.
I don't care. You want a fourth line that shuts down a team? Go ahead. Be my guest. Put Eakin there. I don't care. Your third line, if it has Alex Tuck and Cody Glass on it, should be a line that threatens to score every single time they're on the ice, not just a line hoping to be even.
Yeah. The third line, I think, has one even strength goal this season. And that was the one that Glass threw off of a stick and into the net. It was a pass.
It was in the last minute of a game, too.
A blowout game.
Yeah,
it meant nothing. He meant to pass it to Eakin. It hit off somebody's stick and went in, I think. Now, this is just off memory. This isn't even looking at stats.
No, you're 100% right.
I can't think of another goal at even strength by anyone on the third line
this
year.
Been
even when Stastny was there with Zikov and Peary, nothing.
They have been outscored at 5-on-5 by the fourth line.
Oh,
by
miles.
Leaps
and bounds, because Carrier's got two goals.
Yeah.
Reeves has two goals. Wah has a goal. Nosek has a goal down there. Like, it's not even close.
It's crazy. And so, again, I want to see this team for once have a third line that can put the puck in the back of the net fairly consistently. Because if they have that, to me, they are legit a team to be reckoned with in the West. If they don't have it, then you're asking a lot of your top six players. You
not
just
only that,
are.
But also, we can stop complaining about Cody Eakin. Because Cody Eakin creates negative offense. Not
he is,
zero.
He is a driver.
He sucks the offense out of everyone else that plays with him. But Cody Eakin, even though the numbers say he hasn't been good defensively this year, I'm going to give him a break, and I'm going to say he's been great defensively his entire career. These seven games or however many he's played, I'm going to say that's an anomaly, and I'm going to say Cody Eakin is still a really good defensive player. If Cody Eakin is extremely defensively responsible and kills penalties and does all that and doesn't score, but he does it on the fourth line, I'm perfectly fine with it.
You want to know who that is?
Knock yourself out.
Pierre-Edouard Belmar.
Yeah, knock yourself out. I don't care. I'm not going to complain about Eakin not scoring goals if he's on the fourth line and he's doing all those things. My issue is if he's on the third line and now we have two lines that can't score, and the fourth line can score here and there, but you can't count on them reliably. It puts, just like we say, oh, when Nate Schmidt comes back, it allows Shea Theodore to fit into his role. It allows Braden McNabb to fit into his role. I think Cody Eakin right now, his role, his best role is fourth line center. He's probably the best fourth line center in the NHL. Let him be Cody Eakin. That way we're not sitting here complaining that Cody Eakin isn't scoring any goals like we are right now.
Completely agree with you.
Do it.
So there it is.
That's not happening, by the way.
No, it's not. And I'm sure we'll get to that here in the question. So Josh Moss. What was your top five VGK Halloween costumes, and what can we expect you guys to dress up as at the game? Unrelated question, should we hug Frank Harnish at the game? Keep the great stuff always, guys. I really liked Goldmember. Riley Smith's Goldmember was phenomenal. I talked to him about that actually today. He said that he had the skates on for the majority of the night, but it got kind of hard to maneuver around, and he took them off later.
The guys were telling me that he kept them on. Like, the commitment was real.
Yeah, no, and I asked him, I'm like, how far out? He's like, I was watching TV, and Goldmember came on, and I thought it'd be kind of funny. So Riley Smith, to me, wins. I loved William Carlson's Joker. I thought that was a solid...
It was really well
replica,
done.
Replica, you know what I mean? Like,
and his girlfriend was Harley Quinn. Yeah. And it was like, they looked like the movie characters.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And then, I'm not gonna go five, but Toy Story is pretty awesome, so I'm going Alex Tuck and Malcolm Subban as Buzz Lightyear for Subban and Woody the Sheriff for Alex Tuck.
That was excellent. So I'll just plug my story that I literally tweeted just now. Like, as you were answering that question, it just published and I tweeted it. So I did a player's poll. I asked every player in the locker room today who their vote was for. And Riley Smith was a popular one. Carlson was a popular one. The winner, man, should I give it away on here or should I make him go to the paywall?
I don't know, man. It's up to you on the paywall.
Because
you
teased
it now.
So the interesting thing is the winner... Landslide winner. It
really?
Wasn't even close.
Landslide, huh?
Is someone who isn't really visible in the team photo that was on Twitter, and I haven't seen a single person even identify what this person was as in the costume, and has gotten no love. So completely off the wall.
Is it Jonathan Marchessault?
No, it's not Marchessault. Okay. By the way, Marchessault. Everyone was wondering what Marchessault
was. I don't know what he was.
I asked him, and he didn't even have an answer.
He just.
I was like,
shirtless?
What were you? And he goes,
George of the Jungle.
He was like, I was Strongman. And I'm like, Strongman? What the hell does that even mean? And he's like, I don't know. I just didn't have a shirt on. So
Marchessault
just put fake tattoos on. He just wanted to be shirtless. Who else was really good? Marc-Andre Fleury was really good as Cousin It.
Yeah, that was good.
Let me pull up the photo.
Oh, man, you're not going to give it away, huh?
Should I make them subscribe? I feel like most people that are listening to this subscribe to The Athletic.
Probably.
You know what? I'll give everyone the benefit
of the doubt. Oh, my gosh, we're getting a freebie here folks.
Here we go. Nick Holden.
I didn't even see him.
Exactly.
What was he?
So Nick Holden was a Walmart greeter.
Oh, my God.
With the blue vest, and he had like a like nerdy-looking wig on. That's not even the good part, though. His... wife or girlfriend, I'm not sure which one it is, his lady, was dressed up as a Costco samples lady.
Oh, no.
With like the hairnet and the red hat and the apron. And she actually had a tray of samples.
No.
Walking around giving people samples of, we'll call it drink samples.
That's fantastic.
And they all said, so like apparently Nick Holden and his wife showed up. Like, they were one of the later arrivals. Like, yeah. They weren't late, but they were just one of the last people to show up. So everyone's kind of in there mingling. And Nate Schmidt was telling me that Holden walks in, and, like, everyone in the entire bar turns to the door, and it's just them. And she's holding the tray, and she's like, come and get some samples. And it was just, they're like, that was the greatest moment of the party by far. Like,
yeah.
So unique. Because, like, Carlson, okay, the Joker's great, but also there are going to be 6 trillion people dressed as the Joker every
sure.
year at Halloween.
Sure.
Walmart greeter with Costco samples lady is the most phenomenal, and it's such a Nick Holden thing to do.
It is. It
phenomenal.
Does seem so apropos for Nick Holden to be a Walmart greeter. So that's that. I'm not going to be dressing up for the game because I'll be working. Although if I were to dress up as anything, it would be, I have gone back and forth on this one. It's either going to be 3-hole punch me, which is an Office reference,
okay.
or it's going to be Recyclops, which is another Office reference. If you haven't noticed, I'll probably go as a Office reference character.
Yeah. Recyclops is phenomenal. See, I'm not dressing up either. I don't think I've dressed up for Halloween since I was like 9. I'm boring. But the issue with me is like, so Derek England shaved his beard to be Jack Skellington. Like, that is phenomenal commitment to the costume. And he looked unrecognizable at practice today. My issue is there's no way in hell I'm shaving my beard for a Halloween costume. So that significantly narrows down my options because I either have to wear a mask, which sounds uncomfortable, or I have to be someone who has a beard, which... there's not a whole lot of Halloween costumes out there with bearded people. So I like, even if I wanted to dress up, my options are limited.
I guess. I mean, you can be whatever you want to be. Just keep the beard.
It's not okay. So if I go as like Dwight Schrute, I wear the yellow.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I get it.
It's not going to work. Like the beard ruins it.
But there was an episode or two where Dwight, like after Dwight screwed things up with Angela.
Did he grow out?
He didn't grow out like a full one, but he had some shadow for sure when Angela was getting courted by Andy.
Yeah. By the way, I had never watched The Office up until recently, and I've been binge watching it, and
yeah.
like I've been enjoying it's it, been... like, and I've been like keeping you updated, like
what
I'm watching. So I currently have 2 episodes left. I have 1 episode and then the finale.
Really?
So I'm almost completely done. With
Kudos to
the
you
Office.
For getting through the entire 9th season.
It's not been great.
I will tell you that there you have not seen the last of Michael Scott.
Wonderful. That's
yeah.
what I was hoping
yeah.
for.
Yeah. It's not a lot
yeah.
that you get, but you get something.
I was hoping for that.
Yeah, so that's pretty much that then.
Yeah, I'm not dressing up.
Okay. So next question. Let's see here. Rich Farrell, would you consider Wah at 4th line right wing?
Sure.
Yeah, I would too. I think
I actually had him as 4th line right wing in my
I think Nick
Wah
lineup. Is interesting mainly because we saw a flash, but can he do that consistently at the NHL level? And
no.
That's the big question.
I doubt it.
I'm not talking about production. I'm talking about just going out there and being a guy that could be on the right side of the puck. More often than not on the 4th line. If possible, then sure, why not?
Yeah, I like him. He reminds me of Alex Tuch. He's a less skilled Alex Tuch. He's fast. He's got a big body. He has long reach. And it's one thing to have long reach, but it's another thing to use that reach. And he seems to, just like Tuch, shield the puck with his body, use one hand on the stick. Like, he really uses his reach to his advantage. So I think he should be on that 4th line. Obviously, it's a 1-game sample. I thought that before he played, but I like his speed and size.
Jake O'Hara, last season and so far this year, the effort level has been really inconsistent. Effort seems like the easiest thing for a player to control on a night-to-night basis. Why has it been such a struggle for the Knights?
I think effort is overrated.
I don't think that that's the easiest thing for players to control. I mean, how many times throughout a 7-day week do you feel physically at your best? And now, granted, like, you're not a professional athlete, but how many times throughout the week do you feel energized to the point where you feel like you could do anything that you want to do consistently over and over and over again?
Yeah.
I think that it's really difficult to view these guys with a lens outside of, well, they're out there playing a game. They should be giving it everything they have. Like, they all have families. They all are on the ice all the time. Like, there are certain things that happen throughout life that force you to not necessarily be able to give 100%, like being sick or whatever the case may be. It's not me making excuses. I just think we have to view these guys a little bit differently, with a different lens, in terms of, it's not necessarily the easiest thing in the world to go out there and go 110 miles per hour every single time you're on the ice.
Yeah, I look at it a little differently. In my opinion, effort and give a shit level doesn't determine how the game goes. I think the way the game goes determines the effort. In other words, in my opinion, every night when they get out there on the ice, the first few shifts, they're all giving the best effort. No one is ever slacking on their first shift of the game, the first period of the game. When it's 0-0, you never hear a sportscaster or an analysis go, yeah, you know what, it's 0-0, but man, the effort just hasn't been there from one side. Never. What happens? You get a quick goal against you. Another one goes in. A bad bounce happens. You have a wide open net. You hit a post, and it's just deflating. And you get down, and the team's outplaying you, and you just, like, it's not a conscious thing, but it's just you just kind of turn it off. And then everyone's like, oh, the effort wasn't good tonight. Well, the effort was bad after they started kicking your ass. You didn't get your ass kicked because the effort wasn't there to begin with. So to me, it's overrated, and you always hear it, oh, the effort wasn't there. Yeah, after they were losing.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's an effect of the game, not a cause of the game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm there.
But I
with
do
you.
Agree with you that these guys have lives, and like, there are outside factors that can make you not be at 100% for a game.
From the minute I started covering this team, that's the take-home message that I got, is that, like, if you're a fan, you view them as doing one thing,
machines,
and that's the only thing that they do, and they should do it well 100% every single time they go out there. And that's just not the reality of the situation, because as much as we'd like to believe that these guys are androids, they're actually human.
Yeah. Young humans, by the way. 20, 22, 23-year-old humans. Think
about exactly
how dumb you were when you were 23.
I was an idiot. I can tell you that
right
now.
We were all idiots.
Yes. Jared Justice. I won't say rank butts, because I know Jesse is planning a big write-up for The Athletic. So my question is, who in the Las Vegas media is most like a hockey player? Talks like one, acts like one, smells like one right after the game.
I will say the Vegas media who's most like a hockey player are Mike McKenna
Shane Knighty.
Yeah, those will be my two.
There you go. Also from Jared, can we trade for any of those guys who talked about their coach in an Uber, just so the media can get more access?
Yeah, the Oilers are probably offering those guys up.
Edmonton? It was Ottawa.
Oh, Ottawa. My bad. Wrong dysfunctional Canadian team.
Two of the six players are no longer Ottawa Senators, I believe. Yeah. Michael Perkins. I know y'all cover the Knights, but have you seen the tire fire in San Jose? They're going to have to fire coaching at this point, but is it enough for them to be a threat to VGK this season? Also, how are lacrosse goals legal? So I'll answer the lacrosse goal. It's under the crossbar.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't go over the crossbar.
As long as the stick isn't over, it's totally fine.
As a goalie, you should absolutely tomahawk chop the crap out of anyone who tries that shit. But it's legal.
Anyway, the first part of the question, San Jose. Yeah, I mean, we've all been kind of keeping an eye, I think, on San Jose. It's not been a successful open to their season. Logan Couture is frustrated. Patrick Marleau is not the savior that everyone thought he was going to be, a.k.a. zero people thought he would be. Pete DeBoer, to me, seems like a coach that gets worse as the years go on. Like in New Jersey, went to the Cup Final and then just couldn't get back there. San Jose goes to the Cup Final, loses, just can't really seem to generate that same type of, I don't know, magic, whatever you want to call it, to get the most out of his team. Mark-Edward Vlasic has been abjectly horrible so far this year. He's not been very good. And when you look at their defense, he's the only legitimate shutdown guy they have. So if he's not playing well, they're not defending well. Yeah. And let's be honest, we all know how bad Martin Jones is, and Arendelle is demonstrably worse. So, I mean, it makes sense as to why they're not as good. Oh, and by the way, Joe Pavelski is not scoring goals in Dallas, so I don't know if he would help very much, but you could make the argument that he would probably help in some way for this team that's lacking, I think, a bit of leadership.
Who was it that tweeted yesterday? Was it Wyshynski or Pete Blackburn?
No, it was Wyshynski.
He goes, the Sharks remind me of the team who you're waiting for the injured guy to come back and inject some energy, except for no one's injured, and the guy who would inject the energy is playing for Dallas.
Exactly. So, it's not great right now in San Jose. Clearly, there's a lot of time left in the season, but 9 points in 13, 14, however many games they played is not a pace that will get them to the playoffs. I said it when Erik Karlsson signed. Their window is significantly smaller than a lot of people think. It could very well be closing this season.
I will say this. They've looked bad, and if they continue to be bad, I wouldn't necessarily be that surprised, because you can see the reasons for why they've struggled. This isn't a team that's dominating and is just having bad puck luck. Like, there's reasons why they're struggling, and that could continue. But I know Golden Knights fans hate the Sharks and are enjoying their demise almost more than the Golden Knights wins.
Sure.
I wouldn't write them off quite yet, because if you told me right now the Sharks are going to be in the playoffs, I wouldn't even be a little bit surprised. Remember, it's so early in the season. If they win four games in a row, they're in second place in the Pacific Division. That's how tight things are right now. And they've been awful. All it takes is a couple things to click. And this team does have elite talent. I mean, Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson, Evander Kane, like the Logan Couture, like they have top level talent. If they figure it out, I don't know if Pete DeBoer is the guy to figure it out, but if they figure it out, they can sneak into the playoffs and be a dangerous team. So, I don't want to write them off quite yet, like the Wild, for example.
Sure.
Write them off. They're done. Write it down in a black marker. They're done. The season's over.
Highlight
Cancel
it.
The rest of the season.
Yeah.
But the Sharks, as much as Golden Knights fans want to bury them, I wouldn't start throwing dirt on the grave quite yet.
I don't know that I would either, but they need to turn it around, and they got to do it quickly. And if Pete DeBoer is not the guy, he needs to get out quick.
Pete DeBoer strikes me as the coach that, like, man, if things are going bad, that guy every day in the locker room would get, like, it would get old quickly.
He's not.
He got tossed last night.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. Now,
clown.
Speaking of that game, two of the greatest GIFs I've ever seen. GIFs, I don't really give a shit, but.
GIFs. If you say GIFs, I don't even want
to
talk to you.
Pete Blackburn had one gif of Brendan Dillon leaving his feet trying to hit Brad Marchand and accidentally hitting Brent Burns instead. Just great. Fantastic. And then the other one was Logan Couture and Brad Marchand dropping the gloves and then having a very intense hug session.
With a surprise ending, yeah. They just hugged.
They stopped fighting. They gloves were off. They stopped fighting and just started, like, hugging each other on the boards. Which brings us to Night Train at Party Purdue. As far as hockey-related questions, is Brad Marchand the greatest lover in hockey history?
He has licked and hugged a man on the ice, so I would say yes.
I think it's unquestionably yes.
It's a high bar to meet.
You cannot go anywhere else. Christopher Boyd, since you've covered forechecking and backchecking now, here's a question for the next Rink Rats. Does Glass Eakin playing center or wing matter more for one, offensive zone and forechecking, D, zone entries, 3, neutral zone and back checking, or 4, defensive zone? My initial thought process is it matters for zone entries and it matters in the defensive zone. Those are the two areas that I think it matters the most. I want Cody Glass running everything in terms of from the red line into the offensive zone.
Yes.
I want him running it all. So that includes forechecking. It includes zone entries. It includes anything you do that is somewhat focused on offensive production. I want Cody Glass as the driver for that. Most of what I have suggested in terms of if they're going to play on the same line, have them rotate duties throughout play. If you want a more defensively responsible center, kind of shoring things up in your own zone, have Glass play the wing on defense and Cody Eakin take care of the middle of the ice in your own zone. And then when you transition, get the puck into Cody Glass's hands and allow him to run everything. Like, I get that that might not necessarily be commonplace, but I think those three guys, with talk included, are smart enough to be able to make that happen.
Yeah, so for those that don't know, the biggest difference in playing center and playing wing is in the defensive zone, the center's defensive responsibilities are infinitely more important and used more often than the wingers. The wingers, you basically just watch the point, the defenseman on the point, don't let them get shots through, try to force things. Whereas the center is kind of a roamer, and he's going around basically wherever the puck is, he's supporting whoever. Yeah. When a defenseman goes into a corner to fight for the puck, the center has to be there so that if that puck comes out to the other team, he's the one to defend them. The center has a lot more responsibility. On the offensive zone, it doesn't really matter because the way the Golden Knights system works, in some teams it does matter because the wingers are the forecheckers down low in the corners, which you obviously don't want Glass doing because that's the weakest part of his game. But I actually talked to Cody Glass about this on the road, and he was like, the way our system works, we don't really look at it when we're entering the zone as center, wing, and wing. We look at it as F1, F2, and F3, and that means first center over the blue line, first forward over the blue line, second and third. And if you're the first forward over the blue line, you're the hard forechecker. If you're the second, you're the one coming on the weak side trying to support him. And then if you're the third, you're kind of the guy who hangs back and waits and is the first man back if you have to. That's what Glass is best at. Is I don't like Cody Glass, I don't want him battling in the corners as much as possible. Like, I want him, that as few amount of times as possible. I want the puck coming out to him in open ice. So yeah, so that's the difference.
Vinny Vile, when Tuck took control of the VGK account via Twitter, which one of Knights on Ice responses did you love the most? Because I was dying with just about all of them.
I'm going to be 100% honest. I have no idea what he's talking about.
I think when they asked Alex Tuck if real O.J. Simpson did it, that was probably the one for me.
Did they tag O.J.'s actual account?
They did.
Good, good.
Yep, they did.
I honestly, so they asked Tuck a bunch of ridiculous questions from the SB Nation account?
Yep.
Okay. That was during the game, I guess. I missed it.
It was.
I didn't even notice Tuck was doing that until like hours later someone told me he was doing it.
Okay, hold on. Let me see here. Patrick Harrington, favorite TV show to binge? What do you think WA's future is here? Who's not getting re-signed in the offseason? I think The Office is probably the one.
It was fantastic.
So I'm a big Stranger Things guy, but it's already done. Well, not done, but nothing new for a while, so that's tough for me. But yeah, The Office is always the classic.
I'm late to the party with The Office, but I've enjoyed it. Bad is obviously my obsession.
How soon after you finish The Office are you going to run through it again?
Immediately, yeah. And so for me, like, I'm a big South Park fan. I grew up in Colorado, and like, because it's set in Colorado, and a lot of the jokes in South Park are like inside jokes for people that live in Colorado. Like, I absolutely am obsessed with South Park. And South Park is my show where if I'm not really paying attention to the TV, but I just want something on, that's what I put on. Once I finish, because right now The Office is like, I'm super focused in on it. I'm watching every second of it. Once I've watched it all the way through, it can now become the... I don't have to watch the episodes in order. I can just I can put whatever episode is on. Like, it's just going to become like background hilarious, which is what I use. South Park is currently that.
I'll tell you this. If you are paying attention, the more you get into The Office, like the more times you've seen it, the more jokes you get.
Oh, you'll notice a million. Yeah, I'm sure I'll notice a million things that I missed on the first time
through. I just rewatched The Dinner Party.
Oh,
so great.
Golly, it is not good. It is fantastic.
It's like you're cringing the entire time.
I have never been more uncomfortable than the last time I think I watched it. And it's gotten progressively worse over and over and over again. All right, let's continue on here. Boyd Jackson, do you think coach will change the third and fourth lines to Carrier, Glass, Tuck, Nosek, Eakin, Reeves if Eakin continues to struggle to produce? The short answer is not unless there's an injury. I want to believe that at some point that shoe will drop. I just don't believe that it will.
Yeah, and we talked about this a little bit in the last podcast that I was like, I said that Gallant's loyalty to his players is what makes him such a good coach. But it also there are downsides to it, and that is that he refuses to bench Derek England, even though he's been the worst defenseman in the NHL this year. I doubt he's going to demote Cody Eakin because that's his guy. He trusts him, and it's frustrating for us. But at the same time, he's getting the best effort out of Cody Eakin every night because Cody Eakin knows that his coach trusts him, and he's letting him work through this rough patch. So I don't see the change happening soon.
Derek Shane, favorite food in TMA? Should we start a thanks, Bruce, or similar chant at the one-minute mark of each period?
Bruce is amazing, so if you want to do that, knock yourselves out.
Have you heard the It's Hug Time bit that Bruce did for us?
No, I haven't.
For Frank?
That is phenomenal.
Oh, it's good.
I love Bruce. He's the best.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Favorite food in TMA?
I am going to say I can't answer this because I don't actually eat the food at T-Mobile Arena.
Yeah.
In the press box, it's probably the popcorn.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I've never eaten
okay.
The popcorn.
Yeah, it's all right.
I mean, like peanut M&Ms are my go-to. But as far as food down in the concourse, Shake Shack is really good. I've only eaten at Shake Shack when I'm there as a fan, like attending UFCs and concerts and stuff. But Shake Shack's awesome. Whatever the pizza place is good pizza.
Pizza Forte?
Pizza Forte, yeah, that's good. I don't know. To be honest, we don't eat enough down there to answer this question legitimately.
Rabbit, will VGK move Paul Stastny for a veteran blue liner?
I hope not. That seems like it would be a mistake.
I would move Cody Eakin for a veteran blue liner.
And it would be you'd be getting a significantly less quality of blue liner, but the best line in the history of the Golden Knights is Mark Stone, Paul Stastny, Max Pacioretty. I wouldn't mess with it.
Probably not.
It's the best line in the history of the Golden Knights.
Buddha Call 11.
Nice name.
Sure.
Yeah. Is it spelled Buddha?
Like Buddha, like the Buddha.
Like rub the belly Buddha.
Yeah, for sure. Like Zen Master Buddha. Buddha Call 11. Which rental goalie do you think is most likely to land in the division and to what team? And which goalie do you least want to see land in the division?
Man, I'd have to do some research. What goalies are on the last year of their contract? I haven't even looked
at it. Yeah, I don't know, honestly. I would assume, though, that if there was a goaltender going to anybody in the division, it would either go to San Jose or it would go to
Calgary.
Yeah. Like, those are the only two that seem to make any sense in terms of goaltending. It kind of depends on where you think Edmonton really is in terms of if they're good or if they're bad. The Kings are going to look to offload Jonathan Quick, but good luck to anybody picking up that contract and that goaltender.
Jonathan Quick has also been horrendous.
Yes, I'm saying. Like, he has not been very good. The Ducks are set with John Gibson and Ryan Miller. And I think that when you go up, it's Markstrom and Thatcher Demko in Vancouver, and I think they're pretty confident in those two guys. So really, I think the only two teams in this division right now that have goaltending issues in terms of needing a goaltender are San Jose and Calgary.
Okay, so 2020 free agents, according to SpotTrack. Man, these are some big names. I don't think most of them are getting moved.
Let's go.
Number one, Braden Holtby.
Maybe. I don't know. Probably not, but maybe.
I doubt he's going anywhere. Corey Crawford. Well, actually, Chicago has two of them. Corey Crawford and Robin Lehner are both.
I think UFAs. That if there's one to get traded, it's going to be Crawford, not Lehner.
I agree.
So
Lehner's been awesome. And then the other one, let's see, Jimmy Howard. And then it starts getting
Is it not Jimmy Howard?
Yeah, Jimmy Howard, Craig Anderson, Matt Murray. He's not going anywhere. Markstrom, Thomas Greiss, Cam Talbot. Yeah, I think Calgary needs to get a goalie. That's the only thing that can save them. Right now, they are trending in the wrong direction. Not quite as badly as San Jose, but based on what they have 113 points last year or some crazy number like
that. They're the second best team in the NHL,
yeah, right? They have had a rough start to the season, and it's largely due to inconsistent goaltending and bad defense. I think if they are going to make a playoff run for once, they need to get a real goalie.
Lovejoy. You do not have to say my handle, Ryan. It is okay. Who is the greatest pure goal scorer of all time? Take into account era differences and all the good details that come with this type of conversation. Who is the best at putting the thing in the thing? My pick is Ovi. I want to not say Ovechkin, but I'm going to say Ovechkin. Mainly because, and it depends on how much longer he plays, but I also don't think that Ovechkin, if he plays 8 more years or 6 more years or 12 more years, the drop-off is not necessarily going to be that drastic simply because he parks himself in one spot, he takes one shot, and it doesn't matter. It's almost always going to go in.
Yeah.
Or at least 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 or whatever. However many times you want to give him that shot, it's going to eventually go in. And he doesn't necessarily need to do anything else outside of that one thing to continue to score 25, 30 goals every single year in the NHL. I do believe Alex Ovechkin is going to break Wayne Gretzky's goal scoring record because I think it's important to him. I think he wants that. He's got his cup. That would be the only thing left for Alex Ovechkin to say, I have staked my claim to the greatest goal scorer of all time. Thank you very much. I'm getting out of here.
It's hard to disagree with Alex Ovechkin. And for me, it's because he's scoring all these goals in an era where goalies are actually good. If you go back and watch the goaltending, like, look, Wayne Gretzky was amazing. And I'm not going to sit here and say he's not the greatest hockey. It's not even close. He's the greatest hockey player of all time. It's not close. But watch the goaltending. And my God, is it an embarrassment. It's embarrassing. Compared to, and it's not because of those guys, it's because the equipment was totally different. They didn't have butterfly. They couldn't close off 90% of the net with one move, which is what goalies do now.
Right.
You go into butterfly with your right angle, with the correct depth, and you cut off 99% of the net. They just didn't do that back then. You just shoot the puck along the ice, and it goes in 70% of the time. But if you're going to argue someone other than Ovechkin, so just for podcast sake, Mario Lemieux.
I am glad you brought up Lemieux.
To me, all the reasons you said Ovechkin's going to be able to score forever because all he does is sit in that spot and wait for the puck and then put it in the net, that's great and all. But if you put him on a crappy team, I don't know how many goals Alex Ovechkin's scoring on a garbage team where he has to create everything for himself because he just doesn't have the foot speed and he can't create the separation on his own. Whereas Mario Lemieux, and also I'm picking Lemieux because he played all the way until like 06, I think, is when he retired. So he played enough against good goalies to where he proved that he's going to score no matter who the goalie is. And I think you could put Mario Lemieux on a team with 16 beer leaguers and he's still going to score because he was just unbelievable.
This is my hot take. The hottest take I've ever had in my entire life. I became a hockey fan because of Wayne Gretzky. Traded to the Kings. I was 3 years old. It hooked me. I still view Mario Lemieux as probably the greatest hockey player to ever play the game.
That's a hot take.
I'm sorry. I know he doesn't have the records. If he wasn't oft injured and if he didn't have to deal with some of the medical issues that he dealt with throughout the prime of his career.
Yeah.
Mario Lemieux would be significantly closer to Wayne Gretzky.
His points per game are much higher.
Exactly, and that's my point.
Much higher.
Lemieux?
Sorry, not points per game, goals per game. Points per game, Gretzky has it because he had way more assists. Goals per game, Lemieux is pretty significantly.
Gretzky scored over 200 points, I want to say, four times in his NHL career. Lemieux had 199. He's the closest guy to come to 200 points. I just think that given the fact that he played in a later era when goaltenders got better and better and better and was still producing at that elite, elite, elite level,
yeah,
to me, and then you factor in his size, you factor in that he was able to do things that Wayne Gretzky simply could not do. I'm sorry.
And that Ovechkin can't do.
Exactly. Like, I view Mario Lemieux as the guy.
He's amazing.
I just simply think that if he had played longer, if he had had the longevity with that he could have had or should have had, we'd be talking about that greatest of all time a lot differently than we do now by just defaulting it to Wayne Gretzky.
Lemieux, 0.75 goals per game. Number two in NHL history. Do you know who number one is?
I want to say Mike Bossy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mike Bossy. He obviously played when, he started in the 70s. So we're talking.
Yeah.
The goaltending was a guy standing there hoping you don't hit it along the ice.
Right. Right.
By the way, best hockey player of all time isn't Lemieux or Gretzky. It's Dominik Hasek. So we could just settle that.
All right. I'll give you that. You're a goalie. All right, Jesse, what are you working on? Where can people find your stuff?
TheAthletic.com/Granger for 40% off. I'm on Twitter at @JesseGranger_. I literally, while this podcast was being recorded, posted the latest story, which is a player poll on best Halloween costumes. It's funny to see who they picked and also funny to hear them ribbing their fellow teammates for the horrific costumes they were wearing in that night, especially the tights. There was a lot of tights. But anyways, I also got some other stuff coming up. I'm going to be traveling on this Columbus, Toronto, D.C. road trip. I'm going to get a bunch of good stuff. I have a really big feature planned out of Columbus. I also have a big feature planned out of Toronto, and it involves the Hockey Hall of Fame. So nice. Those will be fun.
All right. We are going to try to figure out a way to get the podcast out maybe next week. I don't know. You're going to be on the road, so we'll see how that works. I am Ryan the Hockey Guy. You can find me Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. every single day on Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM, 1340 AM with the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, as well as every single Golden Knights game, pregame, intermission, postgame show with Frank Harnish, as well as on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy. Thanks so much for listening. We will be back next week.
I can't control this. My ass, just come open the door.